Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. When you're forced to make it work with another human being, something wonderful happens. It works because the other person does the same and you both discover that where you lack, they don't. That actually, magically, almost impossibly, you complete one another. So much so that it feels weird when you're confronted with the obvious truth that you are in fact different people. Relationships are codependent. Each person depends on the other, ambitions mutually held. You shouldn't be searching for a version of yourself. Welcome back to The Obvious Choice. While Ren finishes his hash brown, according to him, it was in the air fryer, so it's a little bit crispy, so it's making a loud crunching sound as he eats it. And so if you're watching on YouTube and you see a little bit of like food in his mouth, that's a hash brown, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We're talking about love today, a topic that I think deeply about. I don't understand. In fact, I heard this quote the other day that I really, really loved about love, and it was the paradox of love, and it said, if you think that you understand love, comma, you don't, which I think was very wise. I'm going to try to this is from the next book. This is a chapter of the next book. It's one that I haven't presented here yet. It's still pretty raw, but it's a few things that I've kind of figured out, a couple counterintuitive things. The title of the chapter right now was Grow Separately to Grow Together. Actually, that it's our differences. Everybody is looking these days for somebody, for a partner who is complementary, and how that is perhaps the wrong approach. And some of the big problems, the technology that we use to find a partner today actually are doing a lot more harm than good, because it's finding people like us, because we like people like us, but people like us do not make good partners for the most part. So I'll get into that. But before we do, I have terrible news, guys. Terrible news. Awful news.
I think I heard about this. But I'm emotionally ready, John. Lay it on me. Yeah.
You emotionally ready? I was not emotionally ready when this happened yesterday. The Obvious Choice, the book that came out a full 3 weeks ago now, got its first non-5-star review on Amazon.
No. I'm out. I can't handle this, John.
Never read the reviews.
I will admit that I read every single review.
Button for punishment.
I think I'm going to quit. I think I'll probably, I don't know, what do people do when they quit the fitness industry? I'll probably become a real estate agent. That's what people do, right?
I get fired mostly, so I have no advice here.
Probably become a real estate agent. maybe I'll trade crypto. Maybe I'll make like a Casio meme coin.
That would be terrible. That's the best thing ever. The Casio.
It would crush. like the best part about that is just how well it would do, and how rich I'd be, and how much you'd never hear from me ever again. There was this guy in the fitness industry a while ago. He wrote a bunch of books that were like, you know, started to grow outside of the fitness industry, started to gain a reputation, you know, did pretty good. His books were good. I don't know if you heard, but like the first like month that one of his books came out, it was all 5-star reviews, and then he just kind of disappeared. It's like, what happened?
Well, what happened to that guy?
Goodman, yeah. So, and then somebody else would come in and they're like, let me tell you the story. One day, somebody left an anonymous 2-star review on his book. There was no comment, so nobody knows why. Nobody knows who it was, but they decided to rate the book 2 stars. And John said, fuck it all. Fuck it all. Somebody somewhere who I've never met and wouldn't care about if I did doesn't like my work. And then he quit. And then he decided as a joke, as a yuck, as it were, that he was going to make a meme coin about the Casio watch. And I shit you not, motherfucker made $25 million overnight. And then he just dumped that shit and lived the rest of his days. And that was the last we heard of him.
This guy that got filthy fucking rich off of Casio meme coin.
I think somebody told me that he's got a ketamine addiction now. That's what happens to rich people, right? No? Too soon? Okay. Let's move on. I don't even know what ketamine is. What is ketamine?
It's something that messes you up. I don't know.
What is it?
It's in movies, though. So it's a real thing. It's usually the reason that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence get in the car together. Ketamine, as I understand. And then they bust crime. They bad boy that shit.
That's
what it is.
Okay.
It's only in Miami.
Amber, do you know what ketamine actually is?
A drug.
Okay. Thank you. So on to speaking about love.
I'm the wrong person to ask. I know nothing. The only thing I know of is like Crocodile. Like that's because of Florida, though. That's different.
Right.
All the best drugs are in Florida anyway. Bad boys taught us that.
There you go.
There have certainly been days when I've gotten lost in the Florida Man subreddit of all of the weird shit that happens in Florida.
You got to put in your birthday and then type in Florida Man and see what was happening on your birthday in Florida. That's always fun.
What was the one? This dude stole an ambulance and then crashed it into a fast food diner or something like that?
Like, I mean, oh, yeah, of course, it was a Florida Tuesday. Man. That
would
be just
yeah.
That's not even special.
Sounds right.
Sounds
okay.
On to love, here, fellas, dear listener.
Perfect segue.
So, like I said, this chapter is called "Grow Separately to Grow Together," and it starts like this. It says, "We're egotistical. We like people like us, but people like us do not make good partners. Many of our relationships start because of similarities, despite it being the opposites that make them work. Compatibility is hard to maintain. Love cannot just be two people playing house like congenial children. It's a partnership where each person completes the other." Yes, I use the word congenial in a sentence. And yes, I looked up how to pronounce that word before the podcast. This is how you win.
Growing up so fast, like, right in front of my eyes.
So way back when, Allison and I were just kind of like hanging out. And then she graduated naturopathic medical school and left for her big Thailand trip before starting practice. And her family had a goodbye party. And so I went. And then we drove her to the airport. Mom called me later that day. And she asked how I was doing. Must have sensed that it wasn't that good. And then said that when she was dating my dad, he went to Europe. She missed him more than she anticipated and hopped on a flight. And then Mum paused. And after a few seconds said, "John, if you love her, you better get your ass on a plane." And I booked a flight that night and I arrived 2 days later. There's this 16th century French moralist, François de la Rochefoucauld. Mm-hmm. Here's what he wrote. He said, "Absence diminishes small loves and increases great ones as the wind blows out the candle and fans the bonfire." I like that metaphor a lot. A wind blows out the candle and fans the bonfire. It's very visual. I like that. Too soon, maybe, perhaps, but... It was Colbert or John Stewart or something like that. He talked about the California wildfires and he's like, "It's like a fire fucked a torpedo." Or not a torpedo, a tornado. It's like a fire fucked a tornado.
Oh man. You are cruising your way to a 1-star review later today from the Polyamorous Vegans in California, John. Like, get ready, buddy.
Shit, it's crazy what happened over there though, man. There was this fascinating, I'm going to digress because I listened to this podcast that was talking about, you know, how obviously it's not a good thing what happened in California. It's awful in every sense of the word. I cannot even imagine the loss. Like, it's not even the material things, but the sentimental goods that phone down. And there was actually a couple here. It was funny. I was making rock sculptures on the beach with Calvin, and then, you know, Jaden and Allison came afterwards. And then all of a sudden there's like 30 kids that I'm making rock sculptures with on the beach, right? But I made this one that was really, really good. And then I was sitting on this chair on the beach, kind of looking at it and like looking out at the water and stuff like that. And Allison were hanging out, and tons of people were coming by and taking pictures of my rock sculpture.
Nice.
And so it was this couple that walked by and they were taking pictures, and I'm just like, yeah, right. I'm pumping, and they're like, I'm like, this was you. And then the guy looks at me and goes, are you John Goodman? I was like, this is the best fucking day of my life.
Obviously.
And so Frank, if you're listening to this, so his name is Frank, he's a personal trainer in California, but they're visiting here in Mexico, and they were renting an apartment, but their apartment got burned down. And so, you know, they rented a new apartment in Santa Monica, but of course, like all of his, he's a personal trainer, and most of his clients, he said, he trained them out of their homes in the Palisades.
So right. Their
homes are gone, right? But I asked him like what it was like when you were evacuated and stuff. And what he said to me was that he's like, we didn't really know. Like his girlfriend's name was Tony. She said, you know, we didn't really know what was going on. Like we kind of got a call that there was a fire close by and we should go in and get our stuff. She's like, I got 5 pairs of socks for the next few days. Like right. That's what I decided to take out of my apartment, you know?
Right.
And so the photos and stuff that were lost. But anyway, so I listened to this podcast of this guy who was talking about, he said, obviously it's awful what happened, but actually perhaps what's going to come out of this is good, you know, and this is his opinion, not mine. I've never really thought about this, but he said, you know, I think actually the environmentalists were given a little bit too much leeway. We need to have controlled burns. We need to have fire lines. Maybe we shouldn't build tinder boxes. Like we should build with other materials. And it sucks that it requires a tragedy to be able to create widespread change. But a lot of other towns that are at risk are now investigating different ways to build with different materials, to create things like fire lines and stuff. I mean, I experienced that. We lived in Costa Rica. This is years ago. Calvin was around, actually. Was Calvin around? No, Calvin was not around. But we lived in Costa Rica, and Molly and Casey, actually, Molly from Girls Gone Strong was living with us. And there was just this massive fire on this hill, like a couple kilometers away from us, but it was making our way into town. And the wind was blowing, and everybody from town, I shit you not, like jumped on whatever vehicle they had with whatever tool that they had, shovels, whatever, and drove out into the jungle. And the firefighters, it was the middle of a drought. The firefighters, the bombarderos did not have water. And even if they did, there was not going to be enough water to control this thing. It was just so big. What they were doing were they were instructing people where to hack away at the jungle, basically to choke off the fire. And create this big fire line, because the firefighters knew the wind, they knew the weather, right? They knew which way the fire was going, and they basically just were like, well, this space between here and there is dead. Like, it's gone. Like, the fire is going to take it. But it's coming this way, and we can choke it off. And that's actually what we did. And didn't get to the town.
Bombardero.
Bombardero. That's how you say firefighter in Spanish.
It's way more badass than firefighters.
Bombarderos. Bombarderos.
Before Bombardero. Shit.
So there's the saying that distance makes the heart grow fonder, right? And I think that's true. We often have to lose somebody to understand just how much they mean to us. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's the only way to really know, but I actually think that there's more to it. And so what I want to do is share a few things I've learned about love, about how important differences are, that counterintuitively, the more that we grow apart, so long as it's healthy growth, the stronger the unit becomes. And finally, the best way to celebrate the process so you can do great things and enjoy the journey with the people that you love. The happiest couples tend to round out each other's personality. They don't read the same books or have the same friends. One can be introverted, the other extroverted. One a night person, the other useless after sunset, or in my case, after 3 p.m. You need compatibility, but like not all that much. More than anything, you need complementarity and to respect the other person's individuality. This is why I don't read my own audiobooks, people. I like mornings. Allison doesn't. Most days I make breakfast and get the kids ready while she lays in and gets going slowly. This morning, I was up at 5:45 writing. At 7:45, 8, I made breakfast. At 8:30, I went in and softly woke her up and told her it was 8:30 and that breakfast was ready. If we're at home, she comes down the stairs and there's food on the table and the school bags are packed. But then I'm useless in the evenings. Like, I am so comically useless in the evenings. Like afternoons, if I'm honest. And so she does the bedtime routine and I kind of show up to read books. And I'm sure that me not helping at night frustrates her sometimes. Same as some mornings, I wish that she lent more of a hand. But it's a good thing that our energy patterns differently. House management would be hard otherwise. Imagine if both of us were morning people, right? Nighttime would be a drag. Hobbies, interests, the pace of your life, that's all going to change. Marriage, David Brooks wrote, starts in rhapsodies and ends in carpools. Mm. Getting married is a pretty bold thing to do. But once you do it, you face the real job, which is taking off your mask and being with somebody who's taken off theirs. Before you're married, you can live under the illusion that you are easy to live with. But to be married is to volunteer for the most thorough surveillance program known to mankind, wrote Alain de Botton. It's the stripping off of the idealized projection. The disillusion that's going to follow is inevitable. Be with somebody long enough and you'll learn who they really are. And who you really are. So I'm starting to figure out what love means. It's a difficult balance of intimacy and independence that's not always wildly passionate. Don't get me wrong, the butterflies still exist. They're just fewer and farther between. The highs aren't as crazy high anymore, but the lows disappear. Love is more of a gentle warmth. It's a warm cup of coffee on a cold Sunday morning when you've got nowhere to go, nowhere to rush to. One where you can put your feet up and sip and simply enjoy. It's that moment where you hold on to a hug an extra few seconds, press your fingers into her shoulder blades. It's the look over and smile and double pump squeeze of the hand you're holding as you watch your child being kind to another kid. The feeling that you get when you walk through the door knowing that she'll be there. Because you know that she's always going to be there. When you really love somebody, it's serene. And I thought that I loved my wife when we got married. I mean, I said the word, obviously, but I didn't know what it meant. That wasn't love. That was lust. That was passion. Passion peaks when you're young, but love is the thing that peaks in old age. And in order for that to happen, you need to let down your guard. You've got to take off your mask to admit your imperfections. When you're forced to make it work with another human being, something wonderful happens. It works because the other person does the same and you both discover that where you lack, they don't. That actually, magically, almost impossibly, you complete one another. So much so that it feels weird when you're confronted with the obvious truth that you are, in fact, different people. Relationships are codependent. Each person depends on the other, ambitions mutually held. You shouldn't be searching for a version of yourself. Restlessness in a relationship tends to be founded on affection and agreeableness rather than passion. Technology and dating and an algorithmically fueled online life has removed serendipity and randomness from the process. Do you know that 85% of millennials on a dating website said that how a potential date votes is extremely important to them? We don't just swipe away pictures if we don't deem a person attractive enough. It's deeper than that. We don't even see their picture. if their profile doesn't list the same music and hobbies and political views as us. David Brooks called this a smorgasbord of sameness. Don't look for a partner with the same hobbies. They change. Instead, look for somebody who matches your character traits and values, traits like cleanliness or work ethic or generosity, values like family and friends and lifestyle. Remember what I said about how Allison's a night person and I'm a morning person? On a dating app, we would not have met. She'd have included hobbies that happen at night. Maybe would have wanted to see a concert that extended past 10 p.m., as if that's a real time that people experience vertically. The very difference that helps us manage our household is the exact sort of thing that on a dating website might have stopped us from finding one another in the first place. You'd be silly to enter a business partnership with somebody who shares your skills and deficiencies. But I see it all the time in the industry that I come from. One great personal trainer decides to partner with another great personal trainer on a new and exciting business venture. They connect. They respect one another's knowledge. They like each other. And the business fails. That's because neither is good at the other half, the business, the sales, the administration, the operations. They built a partnership where two people do one job and nobody can do the other. Partnership can be best defined as a pairing where neither person gets one another, yet both share core values. An example of shared values with different personalities. Allison and I both value friendship, but it manifests differently. She's extroverted, I'm introverted. She's a planner, I'm not. I'm happy to go along with plans, but I rarely make them. Allison doesn't have to consult with me to invite people over or make plans on nights and weekends. She's 100% in charge of her social calendar. If in the rare case I have something going on, like a work thing or seeing my one friend or playing tennis with a neighbor or whatever, I let her know. And it's less about asking permission. It's more about one partner owning that part of our lives, accepting the responsibility and the cognitive load of it because it better suits their personality. One final example, family finances. We both studied money and wealth for 60 days. Then we agreed on what our family's philosophical approach was towards spending money, accruing wealth, accepting risk, and making investment. She then handed off the management of our money to me. Now, nothing's hidden from Allison, but I accept both the responsibility and cognitive load of our family's financial well-being. If I want to do something, I don't need to ask permission. Instead, I just fill her in. When she wanted to buy a few rental houses with a joint venture partner, it was the same as if I were to book a weekend hangout with friends. Totally fine, but clear it with the other person who manages that aspect of our shared lives so that they can plan accordingly. Some similarity in basic values is no doubt beneficial to a partnership, but too much sameness brings huge costs, wrote Arthur Brooks. Romantic love requires complementarity, that is, differences. Loving long-lasting relationships, especially ones that withstand the pressures of children and aging parents and careers, require tremendous trust and, with that, a delineation of responsibilities. I'll pause there. See if there's anything to add or any reactions that you guys have.
For the dating apps, I was thinking, because it's been a little while, but one of the big things I know a lot of people joke about is like, when you're an introvert, right? Like the only way to meet people is through dating apps. And then when you see everybody's like, oh, I love to travel in my free time. We're like, fuck that. They probably do it like once every 3 years, but they make it look like they do it all the time.
They make it look like they're way more fun than they actually are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, I want to like rewatch Big Bang Theory and eat food and snuggle on the couch. That's all I want to do, but I can't.
To be honest, like y'all, if I was, I mean, obviously I'm not on dating apps, but if I was on dating apps and somebody was like, my perfect night is making my way through every season of The Office. From start to finish, in pajamas, with bare feet, slightly touching one another, with my arm around you, eating a big old bucket of popcorn, I'd be like, Yep, sign me up. If you've listened this far into the podcast, I want to invite you to buy a copy of my new book, The Obvious Choice. It's available now. A lot of people have been asking me what the book's about. The central premise is that it's learning how to position yourself as the clear and trusted answer to a specific group's problems. You see, a lot of people these days are trying to become famous to the faceless, anonymous internet. Instead of becoming the obvious choice to a smaller amount of people who are going to buy from you. It's actually much better, much more profitable, much easier, and much faster, and much less stressful to be obviously perfect to a smaller amount of people than just okay to a lot of people who are never going to buy you. You see, you don't need to be the best at everything or chase the largest audience. You need to become the most relevant to your people. What I do is I emphasize the importance of understanding your audience's needs, meeting them where they already are, and delivering such value that choosing anyone else feels irrational. And so pick up a copy of the book. It's in Kindle, it's in Audible, it's in hardcover, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it. Somebody should be honest. I know everybody tries to make it seem like they are the type of person that they feel like they should be to like get the most responses, I guess, right?
But that's what works though. That's what's funny is if you play with it, like, and you're honest, like, as far as when you look quantity wise, and that's what everybody gets confused. If you want more, you lie. If you want better, you need to be honest, but you get far less. So it's an interesting social experiment for sure.
Interesting.
It's ironic that modern connection requires the exact antithesis of how humans work, right? Because a dating machine app is a marketing and sales endeavor, not a psychological and romantic endeavor. So the second problem is that humans, generally speaking, because we work with humans all the time, and we know this for a fact through working with students in the OTA, humans grossly misunderstand humanity at a base level. Right?
What a statement.
The worst source of understanding humanity is humans. And because we are typically averse to authenticity, we project the version of ourselves that's based on our gross misunderstanding of humanity. Right. It's fucked up from the jump. Like there's no you know, you're going to go on a dating app and intentionally misrepresent yourself based on your own misunderstanding of humanity, generally speaking. And that's going to screw the pooch before you ever get to take it for a walk.
There was an event that Carolina Bomaris, said that she was going to attend. And I was like, if I was in Toronto right now, like I would drive an hour to Barrie where she lives to attend this event. It was an introverts reading night. And so it was, what was it? It was something like everybody gets together in like a lounge or some, and there's like a 30-minute kind of like meet and greet icebreakers. And then everybody sits quietly and reads books.
Right. Perfect. We don't have the social environment that allows us to meet the way that our parents met.
There's no
spaces like that. So
yeah.
Everything's intentionally for meeting. And that means that everything is screwed from the jump. Like if you're having a speed dating or mingling or I hate networking. I'm not a good networker because I can't go purposely network with people. But if you drop your mail in your driveway, I'll say, hey, I think you dropped something. And it was, oh, thank you. It's just another bill. Don't you hate bill? Like, that's how you meet another human in reality.
Sure.
You don't go to a meeting where humans meet humans because everybody tries to win that.
Here's a super interesting stat that I heard the other day. Young men, particularly in their 20s, are flooding to religion right now. Young women are flooding towards basically politics. Like not to work in politics, but politically fueled agendas. And it's the people reporting on it, you know, had a couple hypotheses, but I don't think anybody really knows why, but it's a really significant movement right now. And I think it's, you know, it's some combination of loss of connection and meaning and whatnot manifesting differently, right? You know, what's historically the biggest third place, like basically ever, where before dating apps, like the majority of people met their significant other, the religious institution, the religious community. Mm-hmm. You know, you met in church, you met at the synagogue, you met wherever. Well, that doesn't exist anymore for a lot of people. Well, the data actually is interesting. I've been looking into this a bit. I don't think it'll be in the next book, but I've just been looking into it a little bit because, you know, when people are young, they generally are pretty religious. And then like midlife, like 20s and 30s, they tend to be almost overly dogmatic. And, you know, they can't explain God. And because they can't explain it, they're like, I'm an atheist. There's no logical explanation for this. Because if you think about it, if you ask anybody who is moved by religion and considers themselves religious to tell you why they're religious, every single thing they're going to say to you sounds really fucking stupid. But that's the point. It's right. Not stupid at all. It just sounds that way because there's no way to explain it at all. It's inexplainable by definition. The same as love, right? Yeah, if you think you understand God, you
same
don't.
Thing.
If you think you understand love, you don't. And so what happens is there's certainly a gene for it. Like if you grow up in a religious household, you often lose religion around your 20s and 30s, and then you find your way back to it afterwards. But the trend line is really pretty thick. There where people find their way. But what's interesting about what's happening now is men, particularly in their 20s, that where religion was not a part of their life growing up, are actually finding their way towards it, which is quite new. Just really interesting. It's interesting that with so much technological advancement and advancement in human knowledge and focus on logic and trying to explain everything, religion has not shrunk. In fact, it seems to be growing faster than it ever has. Makes you think.
People need something to latch on to. I think early in your life, you're relatively organizationally minded because that's what schooling does to you. It makes you organizationally minded. You're always questioning what organizational structure you fit into, and you try to find it. See the separation in schooling. There's a great book about this called Tribe. I can't remember the name of the author.
Tribe,
but
Sebastian Younger.
Such a good book.
You said Tribe?
Tribes, yeah.
Tribes. It might be a different book then. Tribe is by Sebastian Younger, Younger but with a J. So Junger, it's phonetically pronounced. But he talked a lot about like PTSD and returning soldiers and how less than 10% of all soldiers ever see combat, and yet levels of PTSD of post-traumatic stress disorder are actually the highest they've ever been, despite basically no soldiers ever seeing combat. And the reason for that is these people are living in such a tight-knit community and everybody's right. looking after one another. And then they're thrust back into America
right.
by themselves, in apartments by themselves, not living in bunks anywhere, with nobody to look after them, with nobody for them to look after. And there's a total loss of meaning. Is that the book?
I think so. Is that the one that talks about how soldiers may be addicted to heroin when they're in combat and they come home and it's easy for them to shake the drug use because it's not associated because of the reasons, parameters, and the environment is completely different. They have almost no rate of A relapse?
I'm not sure. It could be.
I can. Well, either way.
But anyway, Tribes by Sebastian Younger. Yeah.
No, read every book that says Tribe, listener, and you'll figure out what the fuck we're talking about, because we don't know. But they're all good books. Enjoy them. Tribes with a T. But yeah, I think the lack of organization, and now the lack of organization in the context of daily work, I would imagine it's only gotten harder. If you're working from home, you just don't have a lot of places to bump into someone. And when you do, you're both meeting a very well-crafted representative. That's not going to benefit connection. I have a running joke with my nieces, who are young Black women in their 20s, about them wanting the concept of wanting a real man as they put on 3-inch lashes. As they put on their waist trainers or Skims or what have you, fake nails, hair extensions, and having a strong desire for a real man. And I'm like, well, the first time that you have a slumber party with your significant other, he's not going to know who the person in the room is the next morning, because there's just no willingness to be vulnerable in presenting your authentic self, because we built this character up for the purposes of sales. Romance has become a sales endeavor, right? So you're marketing at all times. You never get to know a person. It's almost impossible to not falter as the levels of the relationship get increasingly serious and increasingly unmasked. It's going to fall apart. It's relationship Jenga. You're just going to pull one piece too many and the thing's going to tumble down. It's impossible these days.
But if you look at, like,
which is why I just have a goldfish.
Women are going to politics, right? They're both seeking a third place. Yeah. In church, you find simplicity.
And women aren't going into politics. They're becoming more politically charged.
Yes, but they're going for a community where they feel accepted or where they feel they have more empowerment. Yeah. Same for men in church, generally speaking, to my understanding, and I could be totally wrong because I don't do church stuff, period. But like, men typically have more empowerment in that environment. For women,
100%.
In a political ideology, we typically have more empowerment.
Yes.
And so I think they're doing the same thing, but where they have more empowerment.
Right.
So everybody's feeling to a degree lost and heard and
that church
out of control
thing, sure,
in some capacity. And so they're going to the place where they feel like they have some empowerment or say or control over their life.
Right. Interesting.
I think there's an inherent implied leadership for males in a religious environment. Like, you just assume, but I think there's also an inherent allowance of power and control on the behest of women in political environments. Like, it's the one place, if you're a type A woman who wants to lead, not follow, is accepted, if not implied, if not encouraged. It's the one place for men, if you want to be in charge, because you're a man. Religion invites you to do that. It's accepted. It's accepted and expected in both cases for both genders. So that makes sense to me. Like, you can't switch in the opposite directions, that's for sure. Oh, man. That's for sure. That's an interesting fact, John.
It really jumped out to me too. I mean, we've spoken before about, you know, I'm feeling a pull towards something. I felt a pull towards something. I don't know what it is for a while. And I wouldn't say that I grew up religious. I grew up traditional for sure. I mean, I did have a bar mitzvah. We had Friday night dinners at home. You know, we lit the candles, but we did not observe the Sabbath. We were not kosher in the household. I went to Hebrew school, but like stopped, you know, after I had my bar mitzvah. We went to synagogue, like high holidays, you know, but that was it. We were not like every week at the synagogue, and it was certainly not a part of our community at all, but it was there. you know, it was there. And so I guess I have that gene a little bit, but I mean, I certainly fought it. And even, you know, if you would have asked me, I would have said that I was, I probably would have said that I was agnostic, not atheist, mm-hmm. you know, for a while. But I've certainly been feeling a pull towards some. I mean, you'll see that in the next book. You'll see that in The Obvious Challenge. There's a lot of religious undertones there. And a part of me wanted to really tone it down, and I fought against that. Because I think they're important. I think they're important. I think that, you know, whatever religion it is, it's obviously powerful. And you don't need to understand it.
Right. In fact,
I think if you pretend to understand it, you don't understand it.
Right.
When it comes to religion.
That's fair.
I say we cut it here, guys. Friends, buddies, pals, amigos.
I feel like Jaden gave you that 2-star review, man. I don't know. Just something about the way he was looking at the book in the picture. I don't know. Like, he was kind of... He was either pissed off or excited about the fishies, and I don't know that he wouldn't do it.
That was funny. Allison yeah. called me over. I was in the other room waiting, and Allison called me over. She was on bed with him, and Calvin was doing I was doing Lego with Calvin is what we were doing in one room, and Allison and Jaden were on the bed. And she's like, John, come here. Jaden's reading your book. And I walk over, of course, and he's looking at the cover of the book. Right? He's like, Fishy? And then you know, so you know, snap the pictures, right? Because it's super cute. And then he just opens up the book, and he's so disappointed that there's no pictures. Where's the fishy?
Aww.
That's the best.
So funny.
Oh my gosh! So he's so excited to see more fish in that book, and I know. 2-star review. There you go.
Clearly, this is what was.
His age, though, is like where their personalities really start coming out, and like you get to learn who they are after taking care of a potato for so long.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh, it's the best.
Well, but the interesting thing, I mean, Amber, you know, that we're finding is because Jaden has an older brother, mm-hmm. and his older brother is so much older. You know, yeah. Calvin is 5 years older than Jaden. God, the mimicry is wild. And so you wonder when Jaden does stuff, it's often because he's emulating his bigger brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know what his personality will be like yet, because so much of what he's doing is phrases,
right? Like
stuff.
He looks up to him. He has a personality type that is bonding, yeah. and you know, wants to do that. So that tells
he's
you
starting
a little
to
bit.
Fight back. He's starting
good.
To fight back, man.
I was my older sister 7 years older than I am, and so yeah. I know that age gap well.
Calvin is fully wow. aware that Jaden will be much tougher than him, because
right.
Jaden has had to put up with Calvin beating him up his
That's
whole
right.
life.
That's
right. And Calvin's just like, well, I just need to get it in while I can, because once he gets stronger, he's going to be tougher than me.
That's right.
Yep.
It's true. I'm the baby, and my brother was 18 years my senior, and my sister 13. Mm-hmm. And I never really got physically tougher than I wouldn't say, because they were both tall people. But my ability for quick wittedness was my sure. retaliation.
Yeah.
And I would shut them up so quickly. And that muscle just got honed, and I got verbally tougher than they were. I knew more words, more eloquent in my delivery, and yeah. faster with my wit. And that's because they yeah. tried to verbally beat me down for, you know, I never thought about that until you said that. That's great. But I still think that Jaden gave that 2-star review. If you look back later on Amazon and says, where the fucking fish? You know it's Jaden. He did that. No fishies.
On Goodreads, there's a few low reviews, and you can see the account of like the people who left them.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
You fucker. If I ever meet you. Meanwhile, and then I went, so this is how far I went, right? So this is like everything you shouldn't do. So then I went and looked at the other books that they reviewed that they gave higher reviews than my book.
Oh, no, John.
And I was like, but that book sucked.
Stop it, John.
It should make you feel better, though. Like, that's the thing. Because, like, if you snoop, okay, if I can find you on, you know, Facebook or Instagram, I can see your life. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, there's basically two genres of, like, business nonfiction books. Right. Yeah. There's my genre, which is more like, here's how you think about these things. Right. Here's the really deeper, important stuff to know. Then there's genre two, which is like, oh, here's a framework, A, B, C, D, E. Here's right. exactly what you do. Here's how you build an offer. Here's how you make a sale. Here's how you whatever. And I think they both have their time and place. But generally, what I have found is that option two is much shorter lived because people realize very quickly that that information is actually not worth very much and there's no longevity to it. But it is much more obvious and therefore addictive in nature, and it makes you feel good. Call it like business porn. You know, you feel good when you're doing it, but afterwards you kind of look down at yourself and you're I'm not quite happy about what I'm doing here and why.
Not proud of myself.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if there's a tie between that and ask versus guest culture.
Like, I love how Amber just completely ignored the part about still wearing socks.
About what? What about socks?
Nothing. You'll get into play back.
What was a? Yeah. What was a? It's just nothing.
Yeah.
What
you'll hear when you edit. Yeah.
I don't edit anymore. I don't hear anything anymore.
Well, so. You hear when you that's upload or something. Yeah, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Whatever.
I was just trying to think.
I was wondering if there's a connection between that and guess versus ask culture, because it seems kind of related to me.
Guess versus ask culture. What is that?
So, like in certain cultures, like if you were at my house and you're like, oh man, I'm cold, and the window's open. That's like guest culture, where you're asking like, you want me to shut the window, but you're not going to directly ask me to shut the window. So that's guest culture. And then ask culture is like, hey, I'm cold. Will you shut the window?
Right.
And so I wonder, I don't know in my head that, I wonder if there's a tie between the type of Canadian, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Just basically describe Canadian personalities.
Well, I mean, the only reason that I bring it up is you know, there's obviously going to be somebody who likes one of the types more 100%. Than the other. And that's one of the things that I noticed about this was like, oh, this guy loves all of these, what I consider to be empty calorie type business books, right? So obviously he didn't like mine because he was looking for a quick solution. And I'm unwilling to offer that because I do not believe that it exists.
That'd be such a good post. Empty calorie business books, like for like the industry that we're in. Like if you're going to like name a list of like empty calorie business books, I wouldn't suggest doing it, but for someone who wanted to be confrontational, that would be funny.
I mean, you could just invert it and you can just be like, you know, full calorie and you can talk about what empty calorie is.
Yeah. Then... But from an engagement standpoint, the other one would do better.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a difficult.
Oh, 100%. I didn't say it was a good thing to do.
If you shit on others on the internet, you're always going to get more engagement, right?
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Which is like, I hate myself because I'm even drawn in by it. I was like, ooh, who does this person hate today? Like, but what's interesting is that there are certain accounts that do that where they, you know, call out others or whatever. I would never buy anything from that person. Mm. I watch their video because it's entertaining when I'm on the toilet and I'm feeling terrible about myself and I want to feel better watching somebody else who I, you know, is getting attention get shit on. But, you know, A, do I like that about myself? No, but I'll admit it that it happens sometimes. But B, like the person doing that, the person doing the shitting on, I would never buy from them. Like never, never. Never even consider it. It's never even crossed my mind to begin to think about what they might even be selling. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
It is, John.
Well, we will continue the conversation about love, and particularly a solution to the problem of the next episode, the problem of how to celebrate, how to enjoy the process, how to celebrate the process. You know, it's one of those really nice sounding self-help, self-development type terms. It's like, oh no, like celebrate the process, not the outcome. It's like, yay. How do I do that though? Oh, bye-bye. Thanks for buying my book. See you later. Au revoir. And so, you know, it's kind of a process that I built for myself to figure out how to celebrate and enjoy and have more joy with the people that I love over the course of a process of a large project that I found kind of pulls me along that process. And I've never seen anybody else describe it before this way. And so I'll share that in the next episode. Okay. Bye-bye. Au revoir.
Adios. Bye-bye.